Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right. Hello and welcome back to a Wednesday afternoon edition of the Chase Thomas podcast. I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I am joined by old friend Neil Payne of Hot Takedown and 538, a great sports website that you should go check out if you have not already done so. Neil, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Hey, Chase. I'm doing good. How are you?
I am great. The weather's good. It's nice and hot. Get my outdoor runs in every day again. I mean, I'm just fighting through the pollen and the bad air. But outside of that, you know, I think that makes you better. It makes you more equipped for the new world, the post-pandemic world. I'm ready for it. What about you?
Yeah, I've noticed that, you know, so with all of the new CDC guidance, I've sort of stopped wearing my mask, you know, outside. Unless I feel like I'm like too packed close to people, want to respect their boundaries, of course, but generally just walking around wearing it less. And I got to be honest, it was actually preventing my allergies from kind of flaring up. I was sort of like, do I feel more stuffed up? Do I feel, you know, kind of groggy, sluggish after that? And so I think there's something to be said for wearing the mask beyond just COVID. It was giving us the benefit of blocking pollen, I think.
Yeah, I think the vaccine needs to come with like a pollen portion.
Oh, if only.
Can we make that happen?
Yeah.
Just like a dose of Allegra for every vaccine dose. That would be great. Mm-hmm. Neil, how much NBA action have you gotten through? There's a lot of stuff. I'm picking and choosing. How do you, because it's easy to get overwhelmed, I think, with just the amount of content, and just like the Clippers and the Lakers played at the same time last night. And you're just like, I was up till 2 watching the Lakers last night, and I watch a lot of my stuff, unless it's the Hawks or the Braves or teams that I'm very much emotionally invested in, then I'm watching that live so it doesn't get spoiled for me. But like, I try and avoid Twitter and everything so I can go into it blind, and I don't watch it live. What do you do? Do you pick and choose which games you're going to focus in solely on, or are you someone who bounces around and watches a little bit of everything?
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat where, you know, I'll watch a lot of stuff time delayed, or at this point, you know, with so much going on, because, you know, I write about baseball, I write about hockey, write about basketball still. I mean, we're really in the peak moments for a lot of these things. So, yeah, I'll kind of, and also getting older, a lot of these games are past my bedtime, man. I just absolutely cannot stay up for these West Coast games always. So, yeah, I'll kind of check them out, you know, the high points and everything the next morning and watch the highlights and everything. That's kind of what it's been reduced to. So I'm going to be happy when, you know, later in the playoffs, as they kind of cull down the number of games, more teams get eliminated, each game has a little bit more space to breathe for itself. That's when I sort of lock in more on specific games. But usually I've got, you know, like multiple windows, because I'll stream a lot of things too through like cable. So I'll have like a window with a NBA game on, and I'll have another window open with a NHL playoff game on, and just try to kind of have both of those things going at once. I'm not sure how useful that multitasking is for kind of keeping up with the details in each one. It's sort of like more to have on in the background and then sort of be like, oh, this game seems like it's headed in an interesting direction. Maybe, you know, pay a little bit more attention to that one. But then it's like, oh, Shohei Ohtani is up, or Vlad Guerrero Jr. is up. So I have to, you know, have like a baseball window open too. So yeah, there's a lot of sports, but I've learned from last year to never, ever again take that for granted, never complain about it, never say any ill words about, you know, there being too many sports happening, because, I think we'll always remember the times in which there were literally no sports happening, and that was a lot worse than having too much of a good thing to keep up with.
I'm still going to complain, Neil.
Don't do it. You'll jinx it.
No, we're not going back. What are the odds? What are the odds? I'll knock on wood of back-to-back pandemics. What are the odds?
God.
I'm just overwhelmed. Like, certain things are just in the back burner for me, and I just don't like feeling like I am not up on a certain thing that I need to be. You know what I mean? I don't like not knowing. I don't like just reading stuff and being like, okay, I think I have a good feeling on this, but I haven't watched enough or I haven't seen enough. I mean, thankfully, there's a lot of good stuff to keep up with online, and there's a lot of good, like, MLB.com's website's really good. I love going through their stuff early in the morning so I can parse through everything, and it's just clean, perfect interface. Like, NBA.com sucks. Like, it drives me up the wall at how bad it is, and it should be like MLB.com. NHL.com also great. Like, it's just streamlined, it's really easy to get through, there's the latest, you can go through everything, it's just, it's easy, it's quick, great website. Both of those are great. Keep up the great work, folks. I love you over there on those two websites. NFL.com,
now I will say, yeah. I will say at this point with, so I spend most of my time at NBA.com under NBA.com/stats, big surprise, and it is like super labyrinthine, but I feel like it's almost like, what's that called when you come to identify with your captor's Stockholm syndrome, where like now I'm sort of like, I appreciate the obscurity and the you know, the different like alleyways that you have to kind of go through to find any given stat that. So it's almost like I still feel like there are parts of that particular site that are still my little secret, because I'm like the only person that's ever dug through this specific, like, you know, trail of things. Now I wish I could leave like breadcrumbs for myself so I could get back to it. Cause I kind of have to relearn how to find everything, it feels like, every time I go on there. But yeah, that's where I'm spending the bulk of my time when I'm not on Basketball Reference or, you know, the sports reference sites. Shout out to Sean Foreman and his group there, which still I think are the best stat sites on the internet for sports.
Well, I mean, cleaning the glass is perfect. I love cleaning the glass.
Gotta give props to cleaning the glass, of course.
Very clean website. Pardon the pun there, but it's a very clean, easy to navigate website. But also, StatMuse is good. I've started using that a lot more as of late. It's pretty good. Baseball Savant, the partnership with MLB.com, is incredible. I love that one.
Yeah, and speaking of ways that you can kind of go down rabbit holes of data, if you go there and you ever find yourself looking at those like custom outputs or the experimental outputs that they have, there's like a whole page where they have, I think it's under visuals, they have just like this long list of things that maybe you'll only use once in your whole life, but it's really cool that they have it, and you can kind of get lost in there as well. So I'd recommend that to all the listeners.
Well, this is good. They need to like work on data, and you know, like the NBA.com editorial staff, they're big fans of this podcast, you know, so they'll take our advice, I'm sure. Take it to heart. Look, we just want to be better. I love all these sports. I just would like a more optimized version, so it's easier for all of us and you and I to parse through what we need to parse through. The Atlanta Hawks, they're up 1-0. just an all-time great game one game against New York on what it feels like forever ago now. Was it Saturday it was night? Sunday night? Goodness.
Sunday, I want to
yeah,
say.
Yeah, Sunday night now. What did you make of the game as a whole? What you took away from it? Like, for me, just the 10 guys in the Hawks rotation stood out fairly early on. DeAndre Hunter's rust stood out to me. Lou just playing above and beyond of what I expected with Trey off the floor, because there were some moments where, like, Nate keeping Trey for off the floor as long as he did, it was like, oh, this is gonna be the takeaway of just the what he was doing there at the end of the third and the start of the fourth, and just the spurts without Trey, and you're like, generally speaking, this is where the Hawks go to die, is they've never been able to figure out those minutes with Trey off the floor. And they weren't hitting open looks, like the Knicks were killing them on the glass, and Derrick Rose just kept finding ways inside and just reverse layup after reverse layup, and Alec Burks couldn't miss. And then you look at like the three straight Spain pick and rolls from the Hawks late in the fourth, and that just laser from Trey into the corner for Bogey that's forgotten, and then DeAndre Hunter at the top of the key coming off a Spain pick and roll as well. But what did you make of it, and was it about what you expected, and do you think the Hawks should be considered the favorites in this series going forward?
Yeah, well, so you mentioned the pick and roll. That was something that really stood out to me, because Trey Young, like, we know that he's sort of the maestro of that. He led the NBA in points per game off of pick and rolls, at least among ball handlers. He had more than Luka, more than Dame. And he had 20 points off of pick and rolls in that first game. And like you said, down the stretch, really, whether he was scoring, whether he was finding guys, the Knicks didn't seem to really have much of an answer for that, which I thought was pretty encouraging in terms of what their game plan is going to be over the rest of the series. Obviously, I expect New York to make adjustments off of that. The other thing was, I liked their defense on Julius Randle. He was held to really a very poor shooting game in that game one, and the majority of the possessions were spent with John Collins stuck on him. I think he had really good on-off defensive numbers in that game, and that was a big reason why. But also Gallinari did a good job, at least in terms of denying Randle, made baskets when he was the primary defender. So I liked what they did in terms of those matchups, and I'm kind of curious to see what's going to change going forward, because we know, you know, in an NBA playoff series in particular, it's really a chess match where it's not about who lands the first punch. It's about who has the counter punch and so on and so forth. I think the Hawks are favorites. I mean, certainly on paper, if you look at a model like the one that we keep at 538, we give them an 85% chance of winning that series. And a lot of that is winning game one. You know, the team that wins game one does tend, especially when they steal away home court, they do tend to go on to win the series more often than not. But also, the Hawks are a better team on paper than the Knicks. I think the Knicks played above their head for a lot of the season, and some of the statistics didn't quite believe in them, being as good as they appeared to be record-wise. So I think that those are all kind of factors that play into that number. But it's encouraging for the Hawks, I think, going forward.
Yeah, there's a lot of encouraging stuff. I think the rotation's going to get shorter. I think Hunter playing well down the stretch was great. Bogey is just, the difference with him is just incredible, having a healthy Bogey on this roster. He just helps Trey so much. I am curious to see what happens on the boards, though, because the Knicks were really active, and they really went at Capella and Collins, and I'm curious to see what happens there, and if the Hawks go small more often when their offense can't really buy a bucket, and they just realize, hey, if we can't stop them inside anyway, why are we playing two bigs who can't really space the floor all that much? I'm curious to see what Nate does there. Does your model have 100% chance that the Philadelphia 76ers will win the series against the Washington Wizards?
Pretty close to it, actually. It's 97%, which is, like, it's not surprising. You know, I think the Wiz, it's been sort of exciting for them, inspiring, whatever you want to see them kind of make it as far as they have. But yeah, I don't think many people saw them being that competitive in this series.
It is interesting, because if you flip it in the West, the 1-8 situation could not be any different. Like, the 1-8-2-7, like, it's just amazing. The East is just so different than the West this year, where, like, the top in teams in the West. Like, there is a very, very real chance that the number one and number two seed in the West go down. Has that happened before? I feel like it's never happened in the NBA.
I don't think it has. And there was a really interesting story. I think Kevin Pelton wrote it for ESPN about how this is such an unusual year in the West where the top two seeds have not been like, this is the first time that neither the one nor the two seed has been favored, and it's not even close, by the betting markets to kind of come out of the conference. We've never seen that happen in any conference in modern NBA history, really. And I think it does speak to just what a weird season this was in terms of the teams that actually had the best regular seasons and the teams that kind of paced themselves. The Lakers is ending up in the play-in and having to kind of come through that and then now being the seventh seed. I don't even know what to make of it necessarily. I mean, the Jazz were able to kind of come back and assert themselves. And the Suns, I was really impressed with their game one. But yeah, LeBron, I believe he didn't lose a single, as a Laker, he's never lost a game coming off of another loss. So I think that tells you something about how, you know, nobody is going to count them out until they are dead and in the ground, and they looked alive and well last night.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, the Lakers, like, I have a lot of stuff, and we're going to talk to Andrew Gavari about this after this. But I mean, my notes, I just think it's so fascinating that Montrezl was not involved, and Gasol had a good three at the top of the key. AD was active early. I don't know how much of it was Jay Crowder being gone for almost that entire first half with some crazy fouls that he got called for, like just the finger in the eye. I think it was on Gasol for his third to start the second, and then the one just early on in the first quarter where AD kicked him in the nuts. And it was just a weird start to the game. And then I don't know. I was looking at it, and obviously Chris Paul's shoulder's not great.
Yeah, I was going to say, Chris Paul being on versus off the court is one of the biggest factors, I think, in that game and in the series so far, if you look at the differential for the Suns.
Well, it's interesting when you watch them, because like Ayton, he's dunking now. Remember, like, wasn't it last year that he was averse to being inside and doing those kind of plays and dunking the basketball and just like, hey, stay inside, stop taking these weird elbow jumpers and avoiding contact. And he's evolved a lot, I think, in year 200 Monty. But like, you look at the way they play, and Booker will float. Like, that is something I'd written down, where Booker will float, where they, like, Cam and Chris Paul want to drive, and they want to find Mikal Bridges in the corner, or find whoever in the corner, or just draw a foul, because they were drawing a lot of fouls last night, and that was good, but, like, Booker will float, and I wonder sometimes, I'm like, you're down, and, like, they can't lose certain minutes, where, like, I think there was a stretch where Schroeder had three straight possessions where he scored, and I want to say THT had a bucket during that possession too, but it was like, no, Booker was on the floor and LeBron and AD weren't doing anything, and I think one of them were out too. Like, you can't lose those minutes against the Lakers. You cannot go on like an 8-0 run with Schroeder and THT in a playoff game. Like, you can't lose those minutes. Is that fair? Because like, that was something I wrote down. I was like, oh, this is going to come back to bite them. Like, you can't let those guys beat you in those crucial 4 to 5 minute stretches.
I think that's right. I mean, Booker, they were minus 16 with him on the court. And it feels weird to say something about a guy that scored 31 points, second consecutive 30-plus point game. In his first two playoff games, I believe he's one of the only handful of players ever to do that in their first two career playoff games. But yeah, I think that goes back to what we're saying about the splits with certain players on versus off, where with Booker on the court 40 minutes, they were minus 16. Yeah. With Ayton on for 42 minutes, they were only minus 5. And with Paul on, he was limited to about 23 minutes, but they were only minus 2. And with Crowder on, they were plus 6. So I think that speaks to those combinations. And like you were saying, they need to be able to have Booker, you know, drive more of the play when he's on the court, and maybe some of these other guys are not on the court. And it was really glaring to me. I mean, Bridges was minus 13 also. So it's sort of, you know, they did not do well with that combination either. But yeah, Booker can't be the worst player on that team by plus minus and be, you know, a double digit negative while playing 40 minutes and them, you know, be able to win that game. I mean, that's sort of the elemental math of how they have to win.
Yeah, he's got to bring the ball up more. like campaign and CP are just bringing the ball up too much. Like Devin Booker is not getting the ball a lot if he's not bringing it up. Just do the high pick and roll with him and Ayton, and then move Chris Paul in the corner offensively. If his shoulder's not right, like you just got to move him to the side. And it, but then you look at it and you're like, okay, what is campaign's game? And it's, he's got a drive. He's really good at finding ways inside and drawing fouls and finding guys in the corner and wrapping it around to Ayton or whoever's inside. Like, I understand all that, but like, man, you can't have Booker floating like that. And I think that's part of the reason that his plus minus was really bad there, is he floated and he wasn't active. I have no idea about one particular series and which way it's going to go. And it's the Blazers and Nuggets. Yeah. Coach Thorpe, friend of the pod, has the Blazers the best title odds. I don't know if you saw that this week.
Oh, interesting.
He's all in just their health and where they're at. And you look at the West, and it's just, that just shows you how crazy the West could be this year. Coach Thorpe knows way more basketball than myself, and he's extremely high on them. He's nervous about the Lakers' health and all that kind of stuff, which is all fair. You should check it out if you have not already by going to truehoop.com. But I thought it was fascinating, and you watch them in game one, you're like, okay, I could see it. I could see it. Dame's playing out of his mind. CJ's healthy. Nurkic is back. They got Roko. They got a healthy bench. Simons, Melo. They have guys. Like, their rotation makes sense. I don't hate it. But then you lose game two, and they put Aaron Gordon on Dame in game two. And there's this quote from Malone where he said, at halftime, after the after the 32 points in the first half, we said, let's have Aaron Gordon guard him. That's one of the reasons we brought AG here, his defensive versatility, and obviously embraced it. I think that's huge. Like, do you think that's sustainable, though? Do you think AG can cover Dame throughout the course of this series?
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Everyone's experienced the pain of dropped calls and internet outages, especially working remotely this last year. So here's the question. If you're the telco company, how do you help create better experiences for customers? Simple. ServiceNow digital workflows can help solve network problems faster and provide real-time status updates so customers aren't left in the dark. That's probably why ServiceNow workflows have helped telco companies see an increase in customer satisfaction. But proactive customer communications only half the battle. With a single view of your back, middle, and front office operations, ServiceNow workflows also eliminate silos, keeping teams more in sync and more productive. With our scalable services, companies assure a better experience for both customers and employees on a single platform, the Now Platform. So how do you help provide a better network experience for customers? With ServiceNow for telecommunications to help streamline network operations. Whatever your business is facing, let's workflow it. ServiceNow.
Ooh, I mean, it's a great question. I love that matchup just because I love Aaron Gordon's game and the fact that he's been able to kind of come into a situation where it feels like he's being used in a way that I think suits him a lot more and really kind of highlights the things that he does well and puts him in the best position to succeed. So I kind of want it to work. I mean, I love watching Dame do his thing. So just seeing that matchup, I guess, and seeing it be competitive is great. I don't know. I think the other thing is just whether they can kind of whether Portland can continue to slow down Jokic like they did in game one. You know, kind of it feels kind of silly to say slow down based on how much he scored, but limiting him as a playmaker, that seemed to be so core to what their strategy was. And it makes so much sense when you're going up against a player like that. But then it didn't really work in game two. And I think that that was kind of the difference between those two games. So yeah, I think that chess match with Gordon and Dame, and then just also whether or not they can kind of limit Jokic's all-around game, I think is what to watch for in the rest of that series. And I personally, I don't necessarily think Portland can kind of keep that up to beat them three more times, but who knows? Maybe they can. Like you said, Dame is capable of kind of taking over a series and willing Portland to victory. So I wouldn't count it out by any stretch of the imagination.
If you had to do your best odds at getting out of the West, 1 through 8, how would you do it right now?
Oh man. Geez, it's a tough question. I mean, the Lakers, based on winning that second game, I think I would probably give the best odds to, and that feels kind of weird given that they're a 7 seed and they lost game one. Yeah. But at the same time,
I've already penciled them in like that. I don't know if it's an overreaction, but I was like, all right, they figured it out. This is NCP's injury. Yeah. Like, this is too much. Like the Suns.
Yeah.
Are cooked.
And I think it says just so much about where the rest of the West is at. In terms of like a lot of our concerns about the other teams as to whether they were true contenders or just pretenders, like teams like the Jazz, like the Suns, even the Nuggets to a certain degree, certainly the Clippers, that all of those fears have been kind of confirmed, yeah. At least in the first, you know, couple of games. It sounds like a major overreaction. And I think it, you know, at least some of those teams are going to turn it around and win their series. And at least one of those teams, as I'll say, I don't know which one necessarily, but I feel, you know, if I had to guess, at least one would. But like, I don't know. I just don't have a lot of confidence in any of these other kind of alternative answers to the question. Right. You know, in terms of who might emerge, like I might put Dallas second.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, Dallas, just what Luka did last night was ridiculous. I mean, highlighted by the one-footed three and just barking at Pat Bev after blowing by him the entire way back down the court was sensational.
Well, what he's been doing all series long, I mean, yeah. I think that this is I don't know how much of it is just him rising to the occasion. And this is being sort of the series that we've been waiting to see, you know, from him. We've kind of known that this type of thing is in the offing for him sooner or later. And shout out to Tim Hardaway. He's also, you know, scoring 25 points a game in the series. And they've been kind of getting some support there. But also, I mean, if you're Kawhi and Paul George, like, I don't know. This is kind of a major referendum on the entire idea of this Clippers team, and it's kind of failing right now, like if we're being honest.
Yeah, it's what are the odds saying on 538 right now with the series for the Clippers?
Yeah, so right now we give Dallas a 56% chance to win, which is probably surprisingly low,
yeah,
given the fact that I saw a stat about teams that win the first two games of a series on let's see, so the Mavs became the 32nd team in NBA history to win the first two games of a best of seven series on the road, and of the previous 31, 27 of those went on to win the series. So if we're just going off of that and what it tells us historically, then yeah, the 56% is way, way, way too low on them. Now, I do think, you know, talent wise, the Clippers are not the normal team to fall down 2-0, but you got to think with that stat also, losing on the road your first two games means that you were the higher seed, means that you had the better record and were theoretically the better team. So it's not that much of a, you know, kind of departure from the historical norm if we're thinking about the Clippers relative to Dallas in this series.
Gotta say, a little nervous about my Nets-Clippers preseason finals pick. I'm a little nervous.
Only one half of it.
I am only nervous about one half. I will say I'm getting a little bit more nervous about the Bucks, because I think the Bucks
derailing the Nets. Yeah,
I think that's becoming more and more of a possibility. I'm interested to see how Drew handles just what the Bucks like. What the Bucks are going to throw at the Nets, I think, is just going to be so fascinating, because like the Nets are playing a lot of Claxton and Blake Griffin at the five. Jeff Green's getting like 12-15, but like Giannis, I don't know what they're going to do to throw Giannis. Like Bruce Brown, like I don't know how that situation works with Giannis and Brooke and what the way Milwaukee plays and what Milwaukee's done in Miami, where they've just been like, nope, we're going to run. And we're going to have Bryn Forbes firing quickly with Puget threes. We're going to have shots going up quick and you're going to have to survive. And you're not, because you're the Miami Heat and you played a slow pace, and what you did to us last year is not happening this year. And it's interesting. It's been fun to see, and they've just blitzed them. They've blitzed Miami, and I think they are the most equipped to handle Brooklyn in a 7-game series. Now, would I still pick Brooklyn? Yes. Do I think the Bucks have a much better chance than I thought coming into the playoffs? Also, yes. Are you with me? And I'm sorry, Sixers fans. I appreciate what you guys are doing, but I don't think you're in the same class in a 7-game series. I just don't.
Oh, so first of all, I kind of disagree about that. But
I know. We've talked before. You're a bigger Sixers guy than myself.
Yeah, and maybe some of this is my my time in Philly, you know, that bias talking. No, I think I'll be fascinated to see that if and when it does happen. I do think the Nets-Bucks thing is just looming because it's, you know, going to happen sooner. You know, I don't want to totally write off or pencil both of them in, but I think it's pretty safe to do that in both of those cases. And yeah, I think the big thing comes down to the Bucks defense, which did slip during the regular season this year. They were first in defensive efficiency 2 years ago. And I want to say each of the previous 2 years before this year. And then this year, they were only 10th. But and the Nets offense is just so dynamite that I think that is going to be an interesting matchup. And in terms of who you throw it at Giannis, I mean, who do you ever throw at Giannis? You know, like in some ways, you sort of have to pick your poison with that. And just, you know, I think the Nets are the team that are equipped. I think you're right that the Bucks could pose problems for them, especially when Milwaukee has the ball. I think the Nets solution to that is just going to be almost like this race to, you know, whoever gets the last possession, you know, whoever puts the most points on the board wins and going that way.
Yeah, I don't know, man. It is going to be interesting. I just think the 2-3 matchup in the East is going to decide the East. Whoever comes out of that, and just how happy they're going to be and how confident they're going to be, whoever survives that matchup. And then, I don't know.
I agree with that in the sense of who, you know, the team that comes out of that is by definition going to be so battle-tested.
Yes.
And also sort of like, if you were running simulations and trying to kind of look at all the possible paths and then pick out the team that does win that, by definition, that team is going to be exceptionally strong. I don't know which team it will be that comes out of that 2-3 pod, but the one that does is just going to be so much strong by definition because they had to go through that test. That's sort of one of the reasons why when we do these simulations, we kind of treat each universe as its own sort of separate contained universe. And then we give teams credit in that situation for like beating the team in the simulation, and they get a little boost in their rating so that it's not like, oh, well, the Sixers rating is static and the Nets rating is static and the Bucks rating is static. It's like, no, by definition, in the subset of universes where Milwaukee beats Brooklyn, they have like a super high rating and probably higher than Philly and can give them a lot of trouble. So I think that's a recommendation for how we kind of think about, you know, the multiverse of possibilities that the NBA playoffs might contain going forward.
Yeah, I'm excited. I also just am not ready for Joel Embiid to just stomp all over my team over a 7-game series and Ben Simmons on Trey. I'm not really excited.
Well, you're assuming that they beat the Knicks anyway, which, like, again, we just said that Atlanta should be favored, but yeah. I don't know. I mean, the Knicks are a team. I'm always hesitant to write off these teams that sort of the stats can't explain. And I think that New York is one of those teams that really on paper, it's been a struggle to explain why they've even made it this far. And some of it is like, well, Julius Randle made the leap to being a star player. But even there, it's like, you know, his numbers, they're really good. I don't think they're in the same neighborhood as like some of the MVP contenders. And it's so tough to kind of decouple Knicks, like rational Knicks talk, from the New York media, you know, overcooked, whatever you want to call it, atmosphere, that I think that's what makes them a really tough team to kind of tease out the truth of exactly how good they are. They almost won that game. They are in a lot of ways, they maybe should have won that game over the Hawks in game one. And then we'd be having maybe a different conversation right now.
Yeah, I don't think Julius Randle will have that kind of game ever again. Like, that was just the all-time bad Julius Randle game.
Right.
And also, the Hawks will have to figure out some rotation stuff. I think Hunter needs to be more active. Bogey will also not miss that many open shots. And Trey, I think, will get to the line more. Like, he just decided to get his free throws and his shots forth. And we'll see if he's able to navigate into the lane like that. But there's another good piece on ESPN.com about, like, just the floaters, like the new two-pointer. That's just
yeah, like, I saw that.
Yeah, and that's like Trey's bread and butter. So I don't think they're going to take that away. I think Trey's just always going to be exceptional at that. But we shall see. We shall see. Last thing, we'll wrap up here, Neil. Your stats that you that have jumped out to you when you're perusing the I don't even know what to call this, your NBA.com/stats rabbit hole that you go on, where you have your breadcrumbs, where you have your ants that are coming into play because there are just so many breadcrumbs that you're just attracting all kinds of ants. What have you found in the last few weeks?
Well, I mean, the one thing, one big thing that jumps out is just how efficient Dallas has been on offense and kind of having their way with the Clippers. They're scoring over 130 points per 100 possessions in the playoffs so far. And I think these are high scoring playoffs in terms of, you know, the offensive environment of the NBA gets more efficient every year with a bunch of different factors that are way beyond the scope of what we can get into. But even by that standard, I think these playoffs are particularly high scoring so far, at least per 100 possessions. And even within that, Dallas has kind of stood out. And then at the opposite end of the spectrum, like we were talking about earlier about Milwaukee's defense, they're the only team that's holding an opponent under 100 points per 100 possessions so far in the playoffs. Every other team is allowing at least 104 points, if not more, per 100 possessions. So to me, that sort of speaks to the what we were talking about earlier about the Bucks defense, and really that will be their biggest strength against the Nets. So, you know, those are things that jumped out to me. I would love to see the Clippers fight back a little bit just to kind of I'm tired of having the Battle of L.A. be sort of deferred every year. You know, I feel like we've been waiting for this LeBron versus Kawhi L.A. showdown type of thing for at least 3 years, and it just hasn't happened. And the Clippers are the ones that are sort of not holding up their end of the bargain by and large. So, yeah, to me, that is really going to be the question, is like, can they slow down Luka? Can they slow down that Mavericks offense, which is hyper efficient and has been for the past couple seasons? But man, I want to see more out of them, especially the defensive end.
Yeah. I'm excited to see what happens there. I have no idea, but we shall see what happens with Paul George's back against the wall. You know, as we know, it's going to be great. Nothing. What could go wrong with Paul George's back against the wall? Neil, what can we check out from you across 538.com and the great podcast Hot Takedown this week?
Yeah, well, like you said, you can listen to Hot Takedown at all the various podcast providers. I also wrote a story about Shohei Ohtani on Monday that you can check out, just how great he's been on as both a hitter and a pitcher. It's kind of unprecedented since Babe Ruth. He's living up to that hype. And then I'm going to write about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and the start that he's had. He's the best player in baseball so far, according to wins above replacement so far this season. It's really the breakout that we've been waiting to see from him. So keep an eye on that this week.
All right. Well, cue up the great work, my friend. And we will talk again very soon.
Awesome. Thanks, Chase. Thanks for having me.
All right, the Wednesday edition of the Chase Thomas podcast rolls on. Old friend Andrew Gavari comes on after 2 years away. Andrew, your Los Angeles Lakers are back. Things are fine. Chris Paul got hurt. He played 20-ish minutes last night. Didn't really look for his shot. Devin Booker floated on the outside because campaign and CP dribbled the ball up the court a lot last night and drove and kick and found Ayton inside, and then Booker would float, like I said. Mikal Bridges had to guard LeBron and then just missed a lot of shots, and AD was active early and got Jay Crowder knocked out of the game for the first half, and then there was this run by Dennis Schroeder where he had, like, I think three straight possessions with a bucket, and THT had a bucket during that stretch, and you're like, oh, you're losing the minutes where LeBron and AD are doing nothing. This is bad. This is bad if you're Phoenix. And just like that, I'm like, yeah, the Lakers are winning in like five or six max.
It was a strange game. It was a good game. It was odd in many ways. It was unpredictable in many ways, but also predictable in a sense that, like, it you didn't think the Lakers were going to lose, but there was that moment where you felt like if they did lose the lead that they'd have the entire game, that there was a chance they might lose. But they, you know, but they're the Lakers in a sense that they relied on two things to win the game, which was experience and superstars. And sometimes that's enough. You know, some teams can play worse than their opponent and still find a way to win. And then there's other teams that can't do that, especially if they're playing against a defending champion. And I felt like last night was one of those games where they didn't necessarily play bad. They just, I mean, I think that if you were to break down the 48 minutes and say, who do you think, you know, was better for those 48 minutes? I'd say, like, you could say that Phoenix was better for 28 to 30 of the 48 minutes. But that those minutes that the Lakers were better, they did enough to kind of pad it where they could, you know, find their spots. They padded the lead where Phoenix had to really work hard to get back in the game. And then they just kind of handed the keys to their stars and let them take over at the end of the game. And they did.
Were you expecting this result from the Lakers in game two?
Here's the thing. I didn't know the stat that they showed that LeBron in his 14 playoff appearances had never gone down 0-2. And I didn't know that before the game, which is just a phenomenal stat. You know, I mean, just crazy. And so that, you know, hearing that during the game goes, okay, well, now I feel better. But I did, like, here's the thing. The Lakers won, I think, the last five or six games of the regular season, if you include the play-in game. And there were games where AD looked amazing. And then, you know, LeBron only came on for the last couple games, and you just wanted to see how healthy he was. And clearly, we thought AD was healthy because he did have dominant games, but then the way he looked in game one, you're like, maybe he's not healthy. And then with LeBron, we know he's not healthy because he's not driving and attacking the rim like we're used to LeBron doing that. He's just primarily relying on jump shooting. So what you've got is a team that's a 7 seed, even though they're the defending champions, playing a 2 seed, that a really good 51-win 2 seed team, and hoping that they can win while getting healthier, because the big picture is you want to win a championship. You don't want to just win a series, but losing a game two guarantees a series if you're going to win it is going 6. So now you're thinking in your mind, you know, mathematically, you're going, okay, now this team is hoping to get healthy while winning this series and getting better. Because keep in mind, there's new personnel on this team since AD and LeBron got hurt. So, you know, they're trying to figure out how to work, you know, Andre Drummond in. And then, you know, Ben McLemore hasn't played a minute, but he wasn't on the roster when those guys initially got hurt. And then, you know, it wasn't like they had tons and tons of minutes playing with, you know, Marc Gasol and Wes Matthews before, you know, one of them got hurt. So they're refamiliarizing themselves in the playoffs while trying to get healthy. So and the thing about Phoenix, which I should have known that they were a good defensive team, but what they showed even last night, too, is they're a really, really good defensive team. And if they would have won the game last night, I wouldn't have been surprised, just because this isn't the 100% healthy, you know, defending champion team. And part of that is because they're not healthy and they're not, you know, the perfect version of this roster. But there's also guys who are new to this team that weren't on the team a year ago. And we still don't know if those are upgrades. You know, Montrezl Harrell didn't play yesterday. So, you know, Dennis Schroeder, is he better than Rondo? Well, last night he was better than anything Rondo could have ever given them. You know, and Rondo was great, you know, when it came to, you know, running the offense with the second unit and hitting wide open 3-point shots. Well, what Schroeder did last night was something that was so necessary, because, you know, they can't rely on those two guys by themselves to carry them for 48 minutes. They can do it for the last 5 minutes of a game.
Yeah.
But I don't think this series is over. Look, if Chris Paul can't be 85% of Chris Paul, then I would say, yeah, put your money on the Lakers. But I'm not going to jump to any kind of conclusions that the series is definitely over, because it's not, especially if, you know, you see what Campaign did and you see what DeAndre Ayton's done in the series. It's been phenomenal.
Ayton's been good. He's figured out his role. He's dunking more. He's in the right spots. He knows how to do his pick and roll. And he's just a really smart basketball player now. And he's been good defensively. But, like, the broadcast I had written down, I was like, they really want Drummond to be a thing. Like, they were really talking. I'm like, he's doing his own. Okay, they were all in. Like, they were Harlem was just beside himself. The double-double, I think, that Drummond had in the first quarter. And I'm like, yeah, this is not all Drummond. Most of this is not a Drummond situation. But okay. I mean, he's getting some tip-ins. He's active. But, you know, he hasn't been great. He's fine. He's just flowing. Yeah. He's vibing out there, keeping him afloat. Did you think Drummond was good? Because I thought he was all right.
You know, here's the thing. He had four of those rebounds, by the way, on like one possession. Mm-hmm. Where he just kept tapping. So, you know, Shaq had a bunch of those in his day too. But, you know, obviously I'm not comparing the two of them. I'm just saying that, you know, it was a very inflated, I don't want to call it hollow double-double when he had it. But I think he had done enough to make his presence felt and not hurt the team. And but the thing about him that kills me is when he puts the ball on the floor. When he puts the ball on the floor, it's like, it's just inevitable that he's going to do something bad with it. Either he's going to turn the ball over, he's going to barrel somebody over for an offensive foul. So, I think that our expectations for him are way too high. And I think that, you know, he goes in, you know, we watch every game, like wondering like, all right, like prove it. And now I think we've lowered our expectations, which is what is he going to do to hurt the team today? And then, especially when you have options on the bench, who could conceivably be better options. I mean, you know, Harold didn't play yesterday, but and Marc Gasol wasn't phenomenal, but he had, you know, he had two decent stretches and he closed the game out. You know, I'm looking at the box score in front of me and the bench as a whole was not good. And look, we're still waiting for Kyle Kuzma to do something offensive. I thought defensively Kuzma was really good yesterday. I thought he did some really good things.
Exactly.
Yeah. And sometimes,
I mean, he even had moments like KCP could not shoot yesterday, but he jumped passing lanes. He was not afraid. He was not shaken up. And like LeBron, like that meme at the end of him yelling at KCP and everything, like I thought KCP was fine. Like that's the other thing with this Lakers group is like, even when they're all struggling offensively, they were active and they were aggressive and they were just, I mean, Caruso, THT, all of them, they were diving, everything.
Yeah, KCP had a couple offensive rebounds.
Yeah,
where just by virtue of being the shorter guy between him and the center going for the rebound is probably why he got it. But those were huge, especially if they're offensive rebounds, where not only do they deflate the team you're playing against, but they deflate a crowd. You know, and you know you can sense that when the crowd's like, oh, like again, and you just, you know, you're sitting there in this high stakes game, and when you're the home team, the pressure's really on you because you're thinking, you know, we don't want to go on the road for the next two games against the defending champions 1-1 and give them this home court advantage that we worked so hard for all season long. But yeah, look, Lakers had identical home and road records this year. So as good of a team as they are on the road, they're not that great of a team at home. And I was looking, you know, cause KCP has just been so bad shooting wise. Mm-hmm. I was looking at his, home road splits, and he actually was a better shooter on the road than he was at home. You know, I was like hoping, you know, as a Laker fan, you know, maybe we just what he needs is to get home and be, you know, in some familiar surroundings and maybe get a shot going again. And no, he was good in both. He was 43% on the road and 38% at home. So it's not like he was a bad shooter at home. But, you know, I think that their formula is, you know, AD and LeBron and hopefully two other guys. And we don't know who those two other guys are going to be from game to game. There's guys whose energy we know is always going to be there. And, you know, Caruso is always going to be there. And the question is it going to be Schroeder? Is it going to be Kuzma? Is it going to be KCP? You know, and in most instances, they need two of those guys because one of them might not be enough unless you get a 40-point game from LeBron or AD. And I don't think you're getting a 40-point game from LeBron right now until he's fully healthy. And some of that's also because his free throws shooting is really bad. I mean, the team as a whole, both teams yesterday were phenomenal at free throw shooting. Lakers were 27 out of 31, and the Suns were 28 out of 30. But three-point shooting, both teams shot around 30%. Jake Crowder, I mean, look, you know, people can forget everything he did up until the one that he made, that 4-point play, which was, you know, huge at the time. But I don't know if he's going to continue to, you know, miss all of his 3-pointers. He missed the first five before he finally knocked them down. But you know what I learned about Phoenix last night? Because I kept thinking that the window for this team, as young as they might be, that the window for this team is as long as Chris Paul is there. And I think that they proved last night that they're youthful enough that they're going to get better. And Devin Booker's improved enough in certain areas But I do think that their window will extend beyond Chris Paul's eventual retirement, whatever that may be. That I think that he sort of taught them a lot of ways to win. You know, it's not just about playing smart, but learning how to win games is so hard. And, you know, Devin Booker's a closer. So it's not like they don't have that guy when they need a guy to get a bucket in the last, you know, possession of a game. They already had that guy. But defensively, they really made the Lakers work. Where, you know, there's guys like LeBron and AD where sometimes there's like, there's just nothing you can do. And we saw that in the game that came on that finished after theirs, which was Luka. You know, Tom Haberstroh sent out a tweet this morning where he put, he made a list of all of the people that guarded Luka in for all of his points last night in every basket he made, and 8 different Clippers guarded him on you know, total for on all the baskets he made. Yeah. I mean, I know we're talking about the Lakers Suns game, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot of, with that, that's just like, you know, that's why you don't see NBA champions that don't have superstars. I mean, that Pistons team is, you know, the lone example, but Ben Wallace is going into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah.
And Chauncey might too.
Well, I'm going to say the Lakers in 5. What is your final prediction on this series?
I think that the one thing about this Laker team, another stat that people might have missed, or I don't know if they mentioned it during the telecast, or it's just something that I'm aware of, that they don't lose 2 games in a row. And I think that they also have, look, there was the game against Miami in the finals last year where they had a chance to win the series and they brought out the Mamba jerseys and then they lost and they ended up winning the next game in 6. If they go up 3-1, which is entirely possible because Chris Paul's still on the mend, I don't see a situation where they lose a game 5 in Phoenix. I just feel like they understand that if that Denver-Portland series goes 6 or 7 games, they have a chance to get some rest and get even healthier before that series. So I think they'll take care of business. But yeah, I mean, Phoenix could definitely steal one of these next 2 games. You know, if these guys can't start hitting shots. I mean, we saw in the bubble that this Laker team, which was not a good 3-point shooting team during the season, was a phenomenal 3-point shooting team in the bubble. And if they're knocking down their shots, they're unbeatable. If they're not, then you're putting, you know, more pressure on their stars to come through. But I'm going to be interested. I think the one subplot that kind of got a little attention last night, but not many people noticed it, was the Montrezl Harrell, tweet about, you know, I'm just going to enjoy life or something like that, where, you know, he didn't get a minute last night. And I don't think he's going to publicly create a problem. I mean, but I do think that he should at least get some minutes just to keep his head still in the series, because you don't want that distraction.
Yeah,
that would be bad.
All right, Andrew. Well, we got it in there, but always great checking in on the Lakers with you, my friend. You stay safe out there, and we'll check back in again soon.
You too. Appreciate it, and I hope to hear from you again during these playoffs.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a 4-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.